When we first learned of the conflict that would prevent Secretary Mike Crisman from being here today, Mike immediately suggested as his replacement Carol Whiteside with the Great Valley Center, and we're pleased to have Carol with us today. Carol Whiteside is the founder and president of the Great Valley Center, a nonprofit organization which she began in 1997. For more than 25 years, Carol has worked in public service. Prior to founding the Great Valley Center, she served for 7 years on the staff of Governor Pete Wilson, first as the Assistant Secretary for the California Resources Agency, where she specialized in resource conservation, land use, and growth management issues, and then later as Director of Intergovernmental Affairs, where she concentrated on community and economic development, land use, and natural resources and other issues. Previous to her work in Sacramento, Carol served as a member of the Modesto City School Board, as a member of the Modesto City Council, and as the elected mayor of Modesto from 1987 to 1991. A graduate of the University of California, Davis, Carol has been active in the California League of Cities, as well as the U.S. Conference of Mayors. She currently serves on numerous boards, including the Public Policy Institute of California, the Sierra Health Foundation, and the California Center for Regional Leadership. In 2004, she was appointed to the Governor's California Performance Review Commission. Here this morning to help us seize the moment of opportunity is Carol Whiteside.
Thank you so much. It is also my pleasure to be here today. There are three cities in the valley besides Modesto that I would live in if I weren't living in Modesto, and one of them is Visalia. And if you want to know who your competition is, Chico is the other, and Redding is the third. It's pretty hard to replicate Shasta, not Shasta. But certainly the quality of life in this part of the region is pretty high, and I suspect that's why many of you are here today, because you sense that there are big changes afoot and you want to make sure that you preserve the things that you think are the most important about where you live and about this place. I'm going to start off this morning and read to you an editorial. I don't often read other people's work, but I think it sets the discussion quite clearly. This is from the Fresno Bee. It ran about 6 weeks ago. I don't have the date, but perhaps some of you read it when it appeared. It was the top editorial, and it was called Before It's Too Late. Valley farmland continues to be lost as cities keep sprawling. The valley's rich farmlands are being covered over by urban development at an increasing pace. It's happening piecemeal, for the most part. The eventual shape of the valley's economic and social landscape is anyone's guess, but one thing is certain. Once the farms are gone, they are gone for good. And with them, a way of life that has dominated the valley for the past century and a half. Cities around the valley are expanding in every direction in response to the continual high demand for housing. That demand has run up real estate and home prices well beyond what we've seen and what we've been used to, but Fresno and its vicinity are still a relative bargain compared to the Bay Area and Southern California. That keeps people flocking in. In addition, there's the normal pressure from people already here who want to move up in the housing market. All of that has served to accelerate the conversion of rich farmlands to urban neighborhoods. That has serious consequences. According to some estimates, fully 25% of the nation's agricultural production by dollar value comes from California, and more than one-third of the state's production is in the San Joaquin Valley. More than 250 agricultural commodities are produced in the five counties of the southern San Joaquin. It is, in short, the most abundant farming region in the world. In addition, ag and ag-related industries provide as much as 30% of the jobs in the valley, and all that is threatened by urban growth. From 1992 to 2000, according to the State Department of Conservation, more than 64,000 acres of farmland was converted to urban uses, about a quarter of the total lost statewide, and the rate appears to be accelerating. Land once protected from urbanization under the Williamson Act, which gives incentives to keep land in ag production, is now so valuable for development that it's being purchased and pulled from the act. All of this is happening without any overarching plan or design. Cities and counties continue to make planning decisions independently and in a vacuum. That ought to change. There are many issues hereabouts that cry out for a regional approach. Air quality, water availability, transportation are just some. So is the question of agriculture's future. It's time for all the interested parties, government at all levels, farmers, environmentalists, neighborhood representatives, workers, business people, to get together and try at least to bring some order to the rapid change. We may be seeing the beginning of the end of traditional valley agriculture. That may be inevitable. It may seem desirable to some. But this place will be vastly different when the farmland is gone, and before that happens, shouldn't we at least think about it a little? I suspect that's why everyone is here today, because it's time to think about that a little. And think about the kinds of things that are on our plate, and we would have hypothesized that the region is at the tipping point. I asked Richard to leave this slide up when he finished his talk, because the Great Valley Center hosts a conference every year, and it's just about the valley. That's all we talk about, are issues related to the Central Valley. This is our 9th conference, and this year we borrowed from Malcolm Gladwell the title At the Tipping Point, because we believe that the time right now is right now to make some of the important decisions and determine some of the important directions for the region. You can find out more about the conference, our speakers, and information again at greatvalley.org, but let me just tell you that Henry Cisneros, who's a wonderful and inspirational speaker, is our keynote speaker who will speak to Valley at the Tipping Point. But we're also bringing a very exciting speaker up from Curitiba, Brazil. Anybody know about Curitiba, Brazil? A couple people. Curitiba is a city that in the 60s was about 140,000 and is now 1.5 million. They went through a period of astronomical growth, maybe faster than we've gone through. And this mayor was an architect, which is quite an unusual background for a mayor, actually. And the goal of Curitiba, as they faced their growth, was to create a place that provided transportation that was environmentally sustainable and that allowed for people of all levels to live in the community. They have a bus and train system that's the envy of the world. People get on and off of buses through some plexiglass sorts of tube loading stations where they pay their fares before they get on the buses, and it's a very quick system. And someone accused him of favoring buses and trains over cars, and he said he wasn't against cars at all. He had a friend who owned one, which won't work here, but they have done a lot of wonderful things in Curitiba, and he has a wonderful message, and I'm looking forward very much to hearing from him at the conference. So, at the Valley at the Tipping Point, that's the little commercial, but let me just talk a little bit more about some of the challenges that we have before us. We do a Central Valley public opinion poll every couple of years with PTIC. And when we ask people in the region, most people agree that job creation and economic development are the number one concerns in the area. With national unemployment shrinking and down below 5%, I think 4.4 the last time I saw, the unemployment rate in this region is still 2 to 3 times the national average, and that's a concern for almost everyone. Current economic development theories talk about clusters. For those of you who don't know the term, industry participants in any single sector tend to organize into groups that contain both primary performers, the visible activities that define the group, and secondary performers. So in Hollywood, the movie cluster is defined by the movie producers, the big guys like MGM and Disney and DreamWorks and so on. In Silicon Valley, the cluster is formed around HP and IBM and Apple and Intel. So what makes a primary industry like movie making or computer development or manufacturing into a cluster is the presence of an entire array of secondary or supporting businesses. For movies, it's the costumers, the stuntmen, the animators, the makeup people, the distributors, the advertisers, and the dozens of other related businesses. For the technology industry, it's the designers, the packagers, the distribution companies, the systems engineers, the inventors, and the other businesses who exist because they provide for the needs of the primary industry. Computer technology, development, manufacturing, movie making, whatever it happens to be. Well, right here, there's an industry cluster in our area that generates, as we heard this morning, about $4 billion a year in annual income and provides an economic base that generates jobs and revenue every year instead of an extractive or transitional industry that has to keep moving to survive. Agriculture, of course, provides continuing revenue and repeated returns over time. This industry has the additional benefit of costing very little in terms of public service. In fact, public service costs to this industry are about 25%, one quarter the cost of serving a similar-sized area of urban development. In addition to that, the industry and its related cluster businesses provide about 65,000 jobs in this county. These jobs cover a whole range of activities from entry-level up, including businesses, professional positions, R&D, creative, scientific, financial management, global access, and international marketing. This industry, or cluster, that provides these jobs, direct and indirect, is about 12% of the employment in this area, and the $4 billion income is not always valued. Sometimes it's taken for granted, sometimes by some ignored and disdained, and sometimes called out as unsophisticated, uninteresting, and unimportant. So much so that sometimes people think the entire industry will just relocate to a more hospitable locale where it will be more appreciated and valued, maybe even moving offshore to South America or China. And this is agriculture, the foundation and base of our economy. The Great Central Valley of California is one of seven places on the face of the earth that provides the soil, the water, and the climate that can produce the 350 crops that are known in our area. We are blessed with multiple benefits from this amazing industry. Not only is agriculture an important economic engine and job resource, but it provides benefits in dozens of other ways. The oxygen generated by chlorophyll in the leaves of the orchards and vineyards helps clean the air. The fields provide habitat and recharge the water table. Agriculture provides resources for tourism as thousands of people visit farms and dairies or travel throughout the region to see the Blossom Trail or attend one of the hundreds of food-related festivals. The Asparagus Festival, the Bean Festival, the Chocolate and Wine Festival, the Garlic Festival. There's a festival for fruits and nuts, for peaches, apricots, and if you can't think of anyone specific, you can call it the Harvest Festival, like they do in the small town of Houston. And tourism goes way beyond food booths and blossoms. It's big business. The International Ag Expo, held right here in Tulare County, brings shoppers from virtually every country in the world. More than 35,000 visitors, maybe more this year, arrive in February every year to look at the latest farm equipment and technical innovations. In Stanislaus County, on just about any night of the week, you will find visitors from around the globe staying at the DoubleTree Hotel so they can do business with the Almond Board that provides marketing and access for global customers for the enormously successful global almond industry. Walnuts, pistachios, almonds, chickens, cheese, great wine, all bring buyers and customers into the valley. Agriculture is an industry that we cannot afford to ignore. It supports hotels, the travel industry, restaurants, quick print shops, laundries, mechanics, marketing, distributors, and home builders. And so as we think about that, we have to think about how do we consider and give proper consideration to agriculture and its needs as we face the sort of challenges for population growth that Richard has laid out for us. I would suggest to you that there's a conversation going on right now that's very important to these decisions. The governor appointed something called the California Partnership with the San Joaquin Valley in July of last year. And that partnership is chaired by Secretary Sonny McPeak of Business, Transportation, and Housing, is co-chaired by Fritz Gruppe of Gruppe Development in San Joaquin County and Supervisor Connie Conway from this county. And the purpose or the opportunity that's presented by the partnership is to say, look, San Joaquin Valley, we understand that there's a lot happening, and similar to the suggestions made in the Fresno Bee editorial, you need to talk about it together. You need to have a regional conversation about what your future is going to be and what the challenges are. And the governor proposed that this partnership come back to him by the end of 2006 with specific implementable recommendations for things that would make a difference in terms of economic competitiveness and quality of life in the region. There are 8 local government members of the partnership. There are 8 of the members of the governor's cabinet, and there are 8 civic sector appointees, all serving on the partnership. And they are leading 8 work groups covering all of the big issues for this region: economic development, air quality, health and human services, education, transportation, telecommunications, and land use, housing, and agriculture. And it's in land use, housing, and agriculture that I personally, not only are we engaged supporting that effort at the Great Valley Center, but I think that is fundamental to determining how well these other issues work. If we don't do a good job with land use, housing, and agriculture, it'll be hard to have an economic development future that's successful. If we don't do a good job with land use, housing, and agriculture, certainly there will be negative and continuing impacts on air quality or health and human services. So, of course, it's my issue, but I think it's the most fundamental part of the discussion. Each of the work groups under the partnership was given a very specific scope of work for our 18 months worth of effort. And in the land use, housing, and ag work group, we have to develop a macro-level concept plan for the San Joaquin Valley by bringing together stakeholders and existing efforts. We need the resources to develop a strategy for integrating related parts of a complex system into a cohesive model for the region. We have other requirements as well in terms of identifying barriers, looking for incentives, a whole range of things. But basically, we're going to try to construct a big vision for the region that will help all of the cities and counties fit together in a way so that at the end of the day, this region looks purposeful and not accidental. So what's happening? The models that Richard proposed or presented were used as an early discussion starter, as were some principles for growth that were developed by all of the county supervisors in the San Joaquin Valley. And the principles, as you might imagine, are things like keeping development in compact and close to cities wherever possible, making sure that the fiscal resources for development are identified up front, making sure that there's adequate resources to pay for transportation, that there's housing for a variety of kinds of population, all the kinds of things that we would like to see in the region. And they are all based on values. Our values that we want a healthy environment, that we want communities that work, that we want good air, that we want economic opportunity, and all that information is certainly available to you if you would like it. Now we have a work group that is composed of state agencies, environmental groups, Farm Bureau representatives, planners, city, county, a wide array of interests, and we would invite anyone who would like to participate to join the meetings. And they are going through a whole series of macro-level models, not unlike the ones that Richard showed you, but they're actually sitting down with them on the paper and looking and saying, and we've given them some interesting names just so it's easy to remember. Certainly, we call the existing status quo model Phoenix, which is that we will continue to sprawl without much plan, taking up, what was it, 26% of the farmland, something like that. Then there's another one that we call Brasilia, and Brasilia is like the country of Brazil. If you remember in the 60s, they said they were facing huge growth. This is not my speaker from the conference. But they said, let's plan new cities. Let's start from the ground up and plan whole new cities that will bring people a good place to live and make sure that we provide all the services and things that they need. And in our research and in some of the discussions that we've had about new cities, one of the things that we're beginning to learn is that the current pattern of new town development may be too small. Because what you want is you want an urban place that's big enough to provide all of the services, medical care and shopping and government services and education and so on. Because if you build small places, small new towns, and our vision isn't big enough, people continue to drive to the urban centers for restaurants and medical and banking and so on, and you make the air quality issues worse. So there is a growing body of research, and we're going to try to update it and apply it to the Valley, that says maybe new towns ought to be rare, but big. Maybe they ought to be 100 to 150,000, and we ought to be thinking about them in terms of new cities, which concentrate development. There's another model, which is called Portland. That wouldn't surprise anybody. That's rigid urban limit lines that contain development within some relationship to the city's growth boundary and sphere of influence. And the fourth one is called the Maginot Line. You would know it as saying absolutely no development on agricultural land. And it takes the form, at least in the model, of suggesting that development should be east of 99 and west of 5. That we have our own Fertile Crescent, and it's in between 99 and 5. So we asked the modelers at UC Davis, who are working with us, to give us a map so that we could start off. And we said, put the habitat areas, put the publicly owned lands, put the farmland, put the existing urban areas, put the steep slopes, because you can't build a house on a mountain edge, put all these values on the map, and then come back to us, and we'll be able to tell where we can put development without impacting the things we care about. Guess what? Everything has some value. And what we found in looking at the map is there aren't any places that don't have any value as grazing land or habitat or public lands or riparian corridors or whatever. And what immediately becomes obvious and should become obvious to all of us and perhaps to you as you have your discussions is that planning for growth in the future requires trade-offs. You decide, well, we're going to give up this in order to gain that. We're going to trade this for that. How is it that we balance all of the values and all of the things that we care about in such a way to preserve what's most important and still provide for us the opportunity for growth and economic development that will make us healthy in the future? So right now, it's beginning to look like maybe that macro strategy will be a combination of things. Maybe it will require increasing density. Maybe it will require some new cities. Maybe it will require moving ranchette development off the valley floor. That maybe it's a combination of things that we need to look at. We've asked some of the environmental groups to go off in another group and say, okay, tell us where the most valuable lands that you're going to fight to the death over are, because there's no reason that we should impact those lands. The valley is enormous. And right now, we have lots of space and lots of opportunity for making trade-offs. So why shouldn't we take the most valuable lands and make them mitigation banks and have people buy into them and support them and keep them going? Where are the farmlands that are sustainable over time, and where are the farmlands that, for a host of reasons, whether they become cut off or they don't have sufficient water supply or whatever, where are the farmlands that we know we can probably compromise or develop, and where are the farmlands that we want to make sure that we keep and protect? So that's the kind of discussion that we are engaging in right now. The reason it's important as you go into your own discussions about the general plan and the future of Tulare County is that we operate not by ourselves any longer, but as part of a much bigger world. Your highways connect to other places. Your air comes from other places. Your water table, the rivers, the water systems are controlled in part locally and in part by other places. And certainly the impacts of population growth, whether it's birth rates, immigration, coastal people moving in, resort communities, whatever, is something that connects you to the rest of the world. So we think it's important to coordinate at the regional level with that big picture strategy and then to implement locally. And through TCAG, the Tulare County of Governments, and the other 8 councils of government, there will be some opportunity for taking this macro strategy and creating a coordinated and cohesive hopefully a rational land use and transportation plan for the region. So I leave you with only three thoughts, which in some ways echo some of what Richard said this morning. First of all, the time is right now. There are conversations about this future of this region that are absolutely formative and definitional happening all around us, partly inspired by the governor. And we've never had a governor say to this region before, talk to each other and figure out what you want to have happen. So it starts with the governor's office, the region, the counties, and the cities. This is the moment. We're at the tipping point. The second thing I would remind everyone is that we have choices. I don't honestly think that one of the choices is not to grow. That's not the choice, because that's also beyond our control, as we can imagine, especially when it comes to those birth rates. But we do have choices in terms of what our cities look like, where we put our development, what we do with our resources, and how we make sure that our air and environment is clean and healthy. And the last thought I would leave you with is my rally to everyone, which is that participation matters. And if you care about these things, you've got to be part of the discussions, you've got to be part of the dialogue, you've got to read the literature, because right now is the time when we're going to decide what the valley will look like for the next 30 or 40 years. And I don't believe these moments come around very often. So this is the moment, and your participation is important. Thank you so much.